I'd like to go ahead and give more examples of specific laws or practices that violate either the type law of the state or its sphere sovereignty limitations. I gave a few last time, and I'm using most of my examples from the United States because I'm a citizen and have lived there a long time. I know that that law system better, so I'm going to stick with that. Last time I made the point that natural law theory says there is this panoply of just thousands, maybe even millions of natural laws of what is the right thing to do. And if our laws copy those, then we have the right laws. And to the extent they deviate from them, they're not right. And I explained that Dewey rejects this for very good reasons, I think. But there's an element in that we do want to keep with respect to the norm of justice. That is, while it's not true that for any situation whatever, at any time, in any place, there is something that is the exact right thing to do, the proper and just thing to do, it is true that the norm of justice, the norm, the general norm, the command that we are to treat one another with justice, that does hold in all times, in all places, and for all people. Working out the specific laws that will govern them and be just is a task for legislatures, lawmakers, lawyers, courts. So we do think that the law of the norm of justice holds everywhere and for all people. Now, as to making laws in accordance with it, I last time pointed to some that violated the sphere sovereignty limitations of the state. And I want to mention a couple more. What I talked about last time was that the state regarded itself as the originator, the origination point of the authority that it wields, rather than bearing authority that comes from God because people have been elected to the office or made a judge or whatever. They see it as originating in the state, and therefore the state's the offended party in any crime. That's just not right. There are some other ways the states do this same thing. It may not seem as important, but actually the more you accumulate the little things and let government get away with thinking it originates the power, the more it'll think that for the big things. Take something as seemingly ordinary as a marriage license. In most states in the United States and in most countries in the world, one gets a marriage license, and it's a way the state has of checking on the health of a prospective spouse's, and it's also a way of registering the marriage as part of the public legal order with the state. But a lot of places view the license as the state's permission to get married. So is marriage a privilege bestowed by an almighty state? Or do people have the freedom to marry, whether the state likes it or not? You can always go somewhere else and marry, right? The state takes this absolutistic view that it is the bearer of all authority, the originator of all authority, that we will tell people, yes, you can get married, no, you can't. I don't think that churches make marriages either. The church service is there to bless a marriage. The state may register the marriage as part of the public legal order for legal purposes, tax purposes, for example, or inheritance purposes. But it's the partners to the marriage that make the marriage, and usually there's some kind of social public ceremony. I did some reading up on this and found something very interesting, that up until the time of Charlemagne, there were no weddings in churches. What happened was that under Charlemagne, after he conquered his kingdom and the borders were set, and he could now retire from the battlefield and give attention to domestic affairs, Charlemagne was concerned that people out in the remote villages might be marrying spouses that were too closely related to them. And so what he said to his ministers was, well, why don't we have the local priest check on that? And then if everything's okay, the people can go ahead and get married. And from that evolved, have the priest marry them. Now, Charlemagne lived over 800 years after Christ. So for 800 years, churches never thought that they married people. I think it's nice to have the blessing of the ceremony in church. I did that myself. It was wonderful. As a Christian, I would like God's blessing on my marriage. And the social event then that celebrates it, announces it publicly, can be a church service in which two people pledge their love to one another. Nothing wrong with that. But if we think that we need the okay of the state in the sense that unless the state gives it, we are not really married. And if we think that a church service marries us because the state has transferred its authority to the church in that moment when the clergy say, I pronounce you man and wife, then we have a wrong view of the state and its proper authority and its proper limits. I think the same thing applies to a driver's license. We're quite used to that. I see nothing wrong with there being driver's licenses as long as the government doesn't think that it is giving to the driver getting the license, its almighty permission to go from one place to another. It's not a privilege bestowed by the state. It's something we're free to do anyway. It's not a right or a privilege. It's a freedom. And the state certainly has the right to keep track of who's driving and whether they have passed sufficient tests that show they're competent to drive. Keep a record, because if we find people that get drunk and drive, we can remove the license. Some, you can't do that. The public safety is part of the state's job. That's right. Nothing the matter with that. But it sure is something. There sure is something that the matter if the state thinks that it has the absolute right to say who may go from one place to another, and that it is a privilege that you get this license from the almighty state, and now you're allowed to go places. And if you think that's not the case, that states aren't doing that, I can tell you that on the driver's exam, the written exam that I took when I was 17 or 18, in order to drive, it was in the state of Pennsylvania, one of the questions was, is driving a right or a privilege? And the proper answer, the answer that wouldn't get points taken away, was it's a privilege given to you by the state, and the state can remove whenever it wants to. That's just not right. That's not the proper view of government. There are many other things that are freedoms and neither rights nor privileges. I'm going to finish up this section by talking about something else that's proper to the U.S. only, but it's a good example of what happens when we don't get the sphere sovereignty view. There are all kinds of ways of violating this and the type law for a state and so on, and then failing to see the proper limitations of it or the origin of its power, its authority. I'm going to refer now to something most Americans are very proud of, and that's the Declaration of Independence, the letter that they sent to George III telling him, you're fired, you're no longer our king. It was written by Thomas Jefferson, and it was revised several times in conference with other members of the Congress. Particularly Franklin advised Jefferson on this. But part of what many people think is wonderful is Jefferson's statement, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and have been endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that it is to secure these rights that governments are instituted among men. Sounds nice, but if you look at that in the light of many centuries of Christian thought about politics and law and government, you might notice that Jefferson has flipped the Christian view on its head. He's turned everything upside down. The Christian view, as with Jews before us, before Christians, is that God has built these norms into creation. God's law reveals to us His will for us. God says, be just with one another and be loving to one another. And we have rights. We have the right to be treated that way because the law binds us and the other and my fellow man. Because the law binds him too, I have the right not to be assaulted, cheated, lied to, and so on. And because the law binds me, he has the right not to be assaulted and cheated and robbed and so on. In other words, it's the law that generates the rights. Not the rights generate the law. In Jefferson's telling of it, we're all born with rights sticking in us like feathers in a baby eagle. And then, because we have them, the state, the governing body, the government makes laws to protect the rights. If you think that that's getting picky, let me point out to you right away that there was a real debate in the U.S. over who actually had these rights. Jefferson doesn't say there are laws built into creation by God. He didn't believe in God. There are laws built into creation by God, and because of those laws, we have rights. If that's true, if the rights come to us because of the laws that govern us, then everybody has them, because a law governs all places, all times. But in the U.S., because he flipped it around, there were real debates about who had the rights. Indians didn't have any rights. Blacks didn't have any rights. Women didn't have a whole raft of rights women didn't have. If you make the law primary and the rights come from it, the laws apply to everybody. Then everybody's got those rights. If you turn it around the way Jefferson did and you flip it on its head, then you have debates over who's got the rights and who doesn't. Whom may the government protect and whom not. There's also another remarkable failure in that caused by flipping that on its head, turning the Christian view upside down. And that is that if the laws govern everyone, all times, all places, there's no reason then to say that the laws don't hold not only for individuals, but families. Not only individuals, but churches, schools, businesses. But Jefferson had it that only individuals have rights. And if that's true, a business has no legal rights and therefore no standing in court. It can't bring a case. Well, that's intolerable. Of course, business needs to be regulated by law. People need to know what to expect and what's forbidden. And so the tradition in the U.S. law was, we will create a legal fiction, emphasis on the word fiction, that will regard a business as a person. Now, fiction is a nice word for lie. We have a deficient view. It turns out that on our view, businesses won't have a legal standing in court. That's ridiculous. So instead of fixing what was wrong, we'll create another problem. In the legal system, we'll regard a business as a person, and then the business can have legal standing in court. Businesses aren't people. What needs to be fixed is the initial flip that turned everything upside down. Because if the command to be just applies to everyone, then everyone has both rights and responsibilities. And that goes for social communities as well as individuals. These are some examples of ways in which wrong thinking, wrong views of the state infect political practice that even wanted to be guided by Christian principles. It's hard to weed out all the things that assume that the authority originates with the state. The only difference between the collectivist and the individualist in that respect is the individualist says the authority originates with the people, and the people confer the authority on the state. Neither one of those is a Christian view. The authority originates with God. And people elect who will bear that authority. That's why we have a respect for an office, even if the person holding the office is hard to respect. We still have to respect that office. the thing to do if the person is incompetent or in other ways unfit to hold it is remove them by the normal legal means of doing that. But we still do it with respect for the office because the authority of the office comes from God. I hope these illustrations will help you to see ever more clearly what happens when we first distinguish the different aspects and the ways things have possessed their properties in them. And then we distinguish the ways that artifacts do. We come up with a view of the state as one of the institutions, one of the communities that people establish. And then we look at its type law, which is the relation of might to right. And we want the legislative and the legal to lead the use of coercive force, either by the military or the police. We don't want military dictatorship. But then, even when we get all that done, if we have a representative state where lawmakers and administrators are elected by the people, we still have these other ideas creep in. They keep coming back, ideas that are holdovers of monarchy. I'll give you one more trivial example. It seems trivial, and I'm always afraid of the little things that seem trivial because they eventually grow big and do a lot of damage. Here's another example. I hear a lot of talk by newscasters and people who discuss politics. I hear them on television, I read it in the newspaper, and so on. And there's an expression that keeps getting used. And it goes like this. Well, we have to decide whether messing with this is really in the president's best interest. After all, he's better things to do. He's got to run the country, and we have to let this go. He's got to do what? The president doesn't run the country. The president doesn't run families, churches, labor unions, businesses, schools, churches, health providers, artistic organizations. We can keep going. No. The president in the U.S. heads up the executive branch of the federal government. So it's only one institution, the government, the federal government, and it's only one branch of that. That he does head up. That he's supposed to run. But that's hardly running the whole country, if you get my point. I hope you do. I worry about things like that expression. That's the way ideas sneak in. They get absorbed by a kind of cultural osmosis. People pick it up and they begin to think that way. And if they think that way for several generations, maybe they'll start to make laws assuming that. And things will change. And we'll be right back to an absolute dictatorship or an absolute monarchy or whatever form it wants to take. All right. In our next meeting, our next lecture, we're going to talk some more about ways that laws could be improved relative to this view of government, the sphere sovereignty view. And we'll talk about what laws we might need to make and about interpretations of some that already exist.